normally don't do introductions. Because of the size of the delegation that you normally receive. So it will take 30 minutes for us to do that. I see familiar faces. Members, I don't know if you do want to introduce yourselves. Just for record, maybe let's do that. I'll start there at the end.
Good morning. My name is Michael Carter, a member of this committee.
I'm Dirk van der Westhuizen.
Morning. Sejama Thapo Motau, member of the committee.
Morning. Veronica Mende, member of the committee.
Moleng Matala Ntombela, member of the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. I'm Mainali Soma, member of the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. The acting chair of the commission, you're welcome. And commissioners, you're welcome. Media, KPMG, everybody.
PMG.
What is it? PMG, sorry. I need to go back. Okay, you're all welcome. I have few apologies before me. Are there any apologies from your side before I deal with my apology?
Okay, thank you, Chair. I've got an apology from Honorable Member Jackson. He's on sick leave, and he will be on sick leave for some time. Two is Honorable Dubazan Madlamini and Honorable Goy. Those are the apologies they've got. Both of them are attending other meetings, Chair. Thank you so much.
Madam, from my side, are there apologies?
Honorable Joe McGlure, please.
Right. At least we can account for all members that are not here. With me, I have an apology from Minister Mthethwa, who's the acting Minister for Public Service and Administration. Minister Khadebe, who's the Minister for Monitoring and Evaluation, Deputy Minister Lolo, and Deputy Minister Manamel. Those are the written apologies from my side. Deputy Chair, are there apologies that you would want to entertain from your side?
No.
Nothing? Yeah. Okay. And then if that's the case, then officially we can start with our presentation. Can I make a request that we don't deal with the vision and mission? If we were to write an exam, I think all of us will get 99. The lowest performing person will get 98. But it will be 100, 99. 98 will be the lowest. So please go straight to the business. We only dealing with one agenda item. It's briefing by the PSC on the status quo, effectiveness, capacity, and relationship with various stakeholders, challenges hindering its efficiency in the provincial PSC in all 9 provinces. English. Okay. All right.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. I don't know whether you know all the members of the commission this side who are present today, because we've been reinforced by a strong provincial delegation.
Oh, okay. I think from provinces we do have an interest to know who's representing us.
Colleague,
at provincial level. Maybe let's do that in less than 3 minutes.
Yes, colleague from the provinces, can you introduce yourself?
I am Sunata Mafanya from the Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Yes, the Commissioner is here.
My name is Moira Marie Martin from the Northern Cape, Honourable Member.
Good morning. My name is Mike Silwane from Haute.
Okay. thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. I will lead the presentation from the Public Service Commission on this important matter. The outline of the presentation
deals with the, there will be an introduction, some legislative mandate, which I will skip, effectiveness and impact, TAEC stakeholders and relationships, the overview of capacity, and some additional challenges we would like to point out. By way of introduction, Madam Chairperson, I do want to make the point that we really appreciate this invitation today. It is the first of its kind where we get a chance at least to discuss as a public service commission with the commission our operations and our functioning and some of the challenges relating to that. We do come to this body occasionally to make a presentation on the annual report. But the distinction I want to draw this morning, Madam Chairperson, is that that report we usually present here is a PFMA kind of report that is required by the PFMA on finances in terms of the support we get from the Office of the Public Service Commission, which is the Department of State. But ourselves as a constitutional institution established by the Constitution, we've not really come to this body to present how we function, our activities, the recommendations we make, and so on, as required by Section 196.6 and read with Section 196.4E of the Constitution, which requires that we must table annually a report to the National Committee and also table similar reports to provincial commissions about how the commission has worked. And in this regard, a number of issues that relate to commissioners and the commission have not really been discussed as much as we would like to do. But we appreciate this opportunity. Secondly, I would like to indicate some of the underlying principles that inform our operations as a commission. It's important today that we have national commissioners and provincial commissioners. The constitutional framework under which we operate, Madam Chairperson, indicates that there are quite a number of principles that inform the way we operate. One of those principles is that we are a single commission for the Republic, and therefore, despite the fact that we have provincial offices and national offices, the same policy framework and norms and policies that underpin the commission are applicable throughout our state. Although as of now we operate at provincial and at national level, we don't have a responsibility to local governments. The second principle I would like to outline is the one of joint responsibility, that all commissioners are jointly responsible for the work of the commission and are accountable for it. One point that we have not discussed thoroughly, which we would like, when the time allows, for us to actually discuss, because it's a matter that has seized us as a commission, is the notion that we're a constitutional institution that is independent and impartial. We would want to discuss that at a particular stage, both in terms of what it means financially, what it means in terms of individual independence of commissioners, what it means in terms of institutional independence, the structural independence of the commission itself, is some of the things that we'd like to take. And it's an important point that we would like again to emphasize, that the Constitution as a single commission for the Republic enjoins us to be accountable to the National Assembly, both provincial and national. We are all accountable to the National Assembly, but it also requires that we report both to the National Assembly and also to provincial legislatures. So even the provincial commissioners are accountable to the National Assembly. And of course, we operate through this committee. We are enjoined by the Constitution further to function without fear and prejudice in the operations, which reinforces the notion of independence and impartiality. One issue that we will tease it out without mentioning quite detail today is the issue that although we're a constitutional institution, we have some element of being supported by a public service department, which does bring it to us some challenges in terms of how we operate. I might not go into details about that, but we're doing work as a commission on this matter and so on. The Public Service Commission Act also allows us, which regulates the commission in terms of the Constitution. The Public Service Commission Act allows us as a commission to also delegate the work of the commission both to provincial commissioners, to officials, and so on. And we do have that in our regard. Madam Chairperson, we are asked today to address you on the issues relating to the effectiveness and impact of the commission as the first one. Let me just say, Madam Chairperson, as the NDP, the National Development Plan, states with regard to the public service, the effectiveness and the functioning of the public service, the NDP regards as an uneven. The same term can be used when you evaluate whether the commission has been effective and made an impact on the areas that it operates. We always say ourselves within the commission that one of the challenges that we face is that we are the only body that is responsible for the oversight over the effective functioning and performance of the public service and to propose measures to correct that and also to look at the organization administration of the public service by the executive, which to a certain extent makes us complicit to a situation where if the public service performs well, nobody remembers us. But if the public service also performs badly, we are also implicated in that because we're partly responsible oversight and also proposing measures to improve its effectiveness and so on. And in that regard, in our oversight, there are quite a number of things that we have done, which are a response to what we want ourselves to position ourselves to be able to effectively implement the requirements of the Constitution and our role. One of the things that we have done, Madam Chairperson, has been to overhaul the way we operate as a commission and to have new governance rules that ensure that every member of the commission is responsible for certain activities supported by the staff. In that regard, you will find that we have a delegation framework that delegates certain issues to the chairperson, to the deputy chairperson, to commissioners, and also to specialist teams, which we always bring here with conveners, and also to provincial commissioners. And one thing that has come out as an outcome of that is that the provincial commissioners at national have been allocated clusters, five of them, which are the clusters of government in order to serve with government. A copy of those clusters has been tabled here. Provincial commissioners have also been delegated to be the face of the commission in the provinces. And we also operate through three specialist teams, which is the one on monitoring and evaluation, leadership and management practices, and anti-corruption and integrity. It's important, and those are meant to ensure that we interact with our stakeholders and we effectively make an impact in terms of being available to support and advise members as required by our own functional responsibilities. Madam Chairperson, I've been given some few matters by the Commission to hand over here as what we would say are some of the things that we have done and made an impact on them. I would like just to mention a few. One of the things that the Commission has played a role on is the issue of incapacity leave and e-health retirement, and we have influenced the policies in regard to that. The second issue relating to the instability at the head of the public service has been the short term of HODs. It is the Commission's recommendation that it should be moved from 3 to 5, which was adopted by the executive. I'm told even now that 5 years might not be enough in terms of what the DGs are saying. We have been responsible for checking, for instance, the issue of disciplinary cases, that some people go to other departments while they are facing a disciplinary case in another department. We have influenced the policy that at least in those cases, a person who has gone to another department, that is my case, must follow that person and still continue even there. Employees as candidates for and becoming members of the legislature. If you look at section 16
B of the Public Service Act. We did ensure that after our study, and this has, was effected in the legislation in terms of Section 15B of the Public Service Act, where we ensured that public servants will stand for, like, municipal councillors once they actually have been elected should resign, because in certain instances some of them did not resign. They used to double up as public servants and also as councillors. We've been also involved in the issue of that was Section 36.2 that was talking about. The one of the other issues that we've been involved in is to ensure that the period of notice upon the signature of the case has been initiated is actually kept, because previously what a person would do when he's facing a disciplinary case would immediately resign without even notice. We've influenced, that is Section 16B, where we have influenced that legislation must be changed to ensure that a person who is facing a disciplinary case must go through with that and must not be allowed to resign without serving the notice that is required. We have again recently, as we understand, in PAMA, the new public administration legislation influenced the issue of public servants doing business with government. It's part of the things that we do. Our reports, Madam Chairperson, have been used extensively by the National Development Plan. They are used by academics and institutions. A number of our reports, we have had them in round tables where we try to propose measures to improve the public service, be it in terms of human resource practices, be it a 30-day payment, be it conflicts of interest, and the issues relating to management of gifts in the public service. We have had toolkits on citizens' forums to assist departments and the executive parliament and provincial legislatures to deal with challenges that are facing communities. We just have one example there that we have quoted, Madam Chairperson, that because of our facilitation and our commissioner in Mpumalanga, we're able, for instance, in the municipality of Musikalikwa, to influence the construction of 22 houses, improvement of health services, and the registration of birth and identity documents. 130 houses were electrified because of the tools that the Public Service Commission can bring up, bringing communities, government, and citizens to discuss the issues that affect service delivery. There are many toolkits that we have, and some of the issues that we'd like to table here that shows that although we are not at the top of our performance, but we're making an impact in a number of areas, is that public servants now are beginning to use even our grievance processes and our complaints processes to deal with those matters. We are invited to a number of bodies internationally to make presentations and to relate to that. But our greatest pride, Madam Chairperson, is the contribution that we make to both provincial and national legislatures in terms of assisting them with our reports to actually conduct their oversight duties. Let me go to the issue, Madam Chairperson, that we've also been asked the second question to present on our capacity to deal and manage our stakeholders. We have a slide that puts this August body, Parliament, at the top of our major stakeholders because we're accountable to it, and we also deal with the executive. There are other stakeholders like academia and NGOs. We also have a very important forum of institutions supporting democracy, which I'll mention later. We also relate to organized labor as one of our stakeholders because they do have their members who are affected by some of the work that we deal with. Madam Chairperson, I will take a few of the stakeholders just to indicate how we deal with them and how we've organized ourselves to deal with them. And as an important issue and some of the challenges that face us with those stakeholders. As a commission, we do have a document which we can table here some other time, which is basically our stakeholder management framework, which outlines the stakeholders and the things that we deal with. One of our major stakeholders, as I've indicated, is the National Assembly and provincial legislature.
Madam Chairperson, I made the point in the beginning that we're accountable to the National Assembly, and we also report to the National Assembly and provincial legislatures. And through the National Assembly, we mainly interact through the portfolio committee that you chair, Madam Chairperson. One thing that we would like just to put a finger on is that the committee handles our reports quite well and follows up very well, and we are very grateful to that. But the work of the commission, as you know, Madam Chairperson, affects many committees of parliament and others. One of the challenges that we'd like to outline is that this is a matter that we would like your assistance to coordinate. Although there is some uptake with some committees inviting us, but our sector reports that deal with specific portfolio committees throughout have not been systematically engaged with, and also us being involved in that is one issue that we would like to mention at national. But also we appreciate that there is an intake that I will show later, an uptake that I will show later on. There's a slide that indicates, Madam Chairperson, the committees that have already utilized us and utilized our reports. In 2014-15, we have SCOA, Agriculture, Communications, Health, and Economic Development. Coming to the area of provincial legislatures, this is where, Madam Chairperson, would like really the intervention of this committee quite closely, because there's a field there, and my provincial commissioners are here during debate, they can illustrate. It is clear that there are some provinces which discuss our reports, but a large number, I can say the majority, it's not clear how our reports, even when they are tabled, are actually discussed in the provincial legislatures. And we feel that the provincial legislatures, especially that they are so big and we only have one commissioner in each province, that they miss out in the sense that they are unable to use our reports to enforce, to assist them with oversight work that they deal with. So it's a matter that we would like to get their support, because we do table. Reports that we table at national, we also table at the provinces. Some provinces they are discussing, some provinces they are just gathering dust and are not really utilized, and we would like to deal with that. Madam Chairperson, I don't want to belabor a number of issues that we've already discussed previously. One of the things that we would like again to table relating to commissioners is the fact that there are delays, largely, especially in the provinces and also at national sometimes, with the filling of vacancies of commissioners. And one of the other points that we'd also like to make related to the filling of vacancies of commissioners is there are uneven requirements that commissioners are faced with upon renewal, where the advert from national will require this, an advert from another province requires this, another advert from another province requires this, and you find that the same commissioners have to appear and answer to a number of things. It's a matter that we think this committee, through the chairperson and the speaker, can help at least to standardize, because the constitution does indicate what kind of competences are required from commissioners. But we have also assisted the process by producing what we think is a pro forma job profile of a commissioner, so that if it's discussed and with us and it's acceptable, it's a matter that the chairperson can actually deal with other, with the provinces and so on, to ensure that at least when there's an advertisement for a commissioner of the same commission that is one single commission, at least people are required to meet the same requirements. The second major stakeholder that we deal with is the executive. I just want to indicate that the constitution and our legal framework has actually given the administration and the appointment of the public servants to the executive. Then it has actually given the Public Service Commission the function to oversee the administration and the functioning of the public service as administered largely qualified executive and they are top public servants. And it is a job that we do, and we are also given a function to also advise both provincial and national departments on all personal practices and public administration practices. And finally, which is also equally important, is that we also hear grievances from the public servants over health of commission and commissions that are done by their superiors in the department, which might even include hearing grievances of HODs about how they have been dealt with by the executive. So it's a very important relationship that we guard jealously, Madam Chairperson, that although we're independent and impartial, but our role is to make recommendations and advisories to the executive and senior public servants about the functioning and organization and administration of the public service. And it's a position of trust that we hold it, and that is why we are keen on ensuring that any advisories that we give are impartial, any advisories that we give are professional, and any advisories and recommendations we make are quality advices that we deal with. And in this regard, we are pleased to report to the committee that we have been really having good engagements on our reports, and many of our recommendations, as I've already indicated, have been accepted by executive, bar one or two areas where we have disagreed, and which is in the normal course of a job. And we've also been very appreciative of the role the committee has played, where we have reported, where we've been called together with departments to actually explain why certain things that were recommended have actually not been carried forward. I've already indicated the way we are structured to deal with the work in terms of cluster at national and the delegation to provincial commissioners at the provincial level. One area that we still struggle with is when we do research, and it's a normal question, I don't want to overemphasize it. We do sometimes struggle with departments to get information. We have powers, of course, within our legislation to summon departments to come and produce documents. We have done that on rare occasion where we have found that either through bureaucratic inertia, there's been no response to our request, but largely we have got cooperation when we request information. We've struggled again when we do research in getting appointments because the executive is also busy and they're public servants. But on the whole, we've had good relationships with them and so on. We are establishing also a relationship with the presidency as the body that appoints us, and also that deals with our conditions of service and so on. It's a matter that is improving, but it's not yet there. But we are trying to make inroads also to deal with the office of the presidency, but largely we work with the Ministry of Public Service and Administration, and which has taken some of our things forward. I do want to make this point, Madam Chairperson, because we operate through recommendations, that in our discussion with Minister Hardeva's department, and we would like you also to check this, they have indicated to us that they do study our recommendations, and they, when they present to Cabinet, do present all the recommendations that the Commission that the Commission has made. So the Department of Monitoring does monitor, and in their monitoring they include our reports that they report to Cabinet about, so that Cabinet is aware of the work of the Commission. One thing that I would like to highlight, as it also relates to our independence, and in some measure, Madam Chairperson, that we appreciate that you're aware of it and you've been assisting with. As of now, in terms of financial independence, which is outlined in many institutional frameworks of our nature, we're supposed to get our budget through Parliament and argue our budget through Parliament, but in line with the Qatar's ASMA report also. But as of now, our budget still comes as a sub-program of the Department of Public Service and Administration. And it's a matter that through the Speaker's office and so on, and your office, we have raised it that it should be looked at. The second point is the one that we are supported by a public service administration. And again, in terms of requirements of structural independence, There is an expectation that we should be able to fully appoint our staff in terms of legislation that regulates us and regulates our public servants. But as of now, because we are supported by a public service department, the requirements of those appointments require, of course, that the appointments for top echelons is done by the President of the Republic. And where the President as of now has delegated it to executive authorities, it is required, therefore, that we must seek the concurrence of Cabinet in appointments of DGs and DDGs, even on renewals, and also to consult the Minister of Public Service and Administration. It's a matter that, because, of course, on the panels for sitting, because the executive is busy, sometimes it does take quite a lot to get two deputy ministers to sit on a panel to deal with this. One of the things that, of course, even amongst commissioners does not sit well is because of that process. Whilst we are commissioners that are independent and constitutional institution members, one of our own, a chairperson of the commission, for purposes of appointment, is made a temporary minister or an honorary minister, an EA of the department. And therefore, for that purpose, is an honorary politician and has to appoint the public servants, all of them, or delegate those things to that. It's a matter that does not sit well with commissioners, because commissioners are supported by these officials, but there's no clear role in terms of this public service dichotomy where the whole commission as a whole can participate fully in the appointment of its own members. It's more requirement for a concurrence with cabinet rather than a concurrence with the commission as a whole. It's a matter that we are handling through the ministry and a discussion also amongst ourselves to study what are the other models of support that will ensure that we are not only individually independent, we are also institutionally independent and also financially independent as required by the Constitution. Madam Chairperson, the other stakeholder that we would like to highlight here is that as we are a constitutional institution, we also operate in the forum that is coordinated at national level by the Speaker, which is the forum of institutions supporting democracy, where we operate with the public protector, the public, the Human Rights Commission, the IEC, and so on. We operate in this commission to discuss the issues relating to conditions of service, to discuss these issues of financial independence, and we are also, in this regard, led by the Office of the Speaker, and we've also made the chairperson aware. And in this regard, one of the things, for instance, that is being piloted there, I've given some information of a draft bill that is done by Justice, where all these institutions supporting democracy now will actually have a commission that will look after his salaries, allowances, and benefits, and recommend to the President for final conclusion. It's a matter that we are fairly excited about as a commission, because it will ensure that as of now, our conditions of service, which are unclear and linked to the public service, makes us quite unhappy, but it's a matter that is being handled through that forum, and there is a bill that will also include our commission to be operate where there will be an independent commission advising the President on our terms and conditions of service. It's one issue that we are excited about. But let me also quickly hasten, Madam Chairperson, that in the provinces as of now, and my colleagues are here can attest to that, it's still not clear how this coordination of their participation with the institutions supporting democracy. In some provinces, there will be a speaker's office that is involved. In others, they operate themselves with the many institutions supporting democracy. And in many of the provinces, of course, the institutions supporting democracy do not have commissioners as such, other than the Gender Commission and so on, and to a certain extent the Human Rights Commission. Others have actually officials. So you'll find our commissioners have to operate with the officials in those institutions. But still, the point that we'd like is that as it's national, if we can be assisted by the committee to ensure that the interaction with the institutions supporting democracy again comes through the speakers of the provincial legislatures to assist our colleagues to operate in this area and to share the experiences with people of a similar kind. Let me then deal with the final point that we've been asked. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, we will make that information available because in our approach, we just wanted to mention the issues without specifically naming in public provinces. But we will provide the information to the chairperson because it's available. Thank you. The overview of capacity. Chairperson, let me say that, as I've indicated, we're supported by a national department. Our offices are in Pretoria and in 9 provincial offices. We have a capacity as of now of 297 posts that support the Commission, 213 at national and 84 at provincial level. The national, of course, work still covers also provincial offices. And I must indicate that we've been helped to a certain extent by National Treasury by getting additional posts, but this is by no means adequate for us to be able to carry out our work. In that 297, I have not included the commissioners who are 14. They are outside that, and if they were to be included, of course, we would have positions in the Public Service Commission of about 311. I have a slide, Chairperson, that shows the division of positions from the DG's office to the DDGs that support the specialist teams, and you see the national provincial commissioners that are there, and of course the same national officials who support the provincial teams and do national projects and also support the provincial commissioners who are heading clusters. I've indicated the competencies that are pushed by the 3 specialist teams that are dividing our constitutional work, leadership and management practices, monitoring and evaluation, and integrity and anti-corruption. Chairperson, I just want to make the point without overemphasizing it, to say that the public service, as you know, is about 1.3, and the field positions are about 1.2 million, and the division is about 900,000 in the provinces and 300,000 at national level. And this is the capacity that we have to service and monitor every aspect of the public service that our constitutional framework does give us. And we do want to say, like all other institutions supporting democracy have said to the committees that support them, we would appreciate to get more capacity, although we know that the country is operating under financial constraints and so on. In order to do this work, we would appreciate more capacity. One of the most bothering things for us, Madam Chairperson, is that even within those limited restraints, we have found that National Treasury over the 3 years from 2013 to date has been whittling our budget down to a situation where we are standing today at 15 million deficit, which has limited quite seriously our operations, especially this year, because we've had to face now that 15 million. And if you look, for instance, at this year's budget, you will see that the figure that is allocated is 222 million, but included in that is actually ring fence 11 million, which is for purposes of accommodation only, both at national and provincial areas. And you'll find the real amount that we have is about 211 million, which if you look over the years, and as the slide shows there, has actually meant that effectively we've got a 15 million shortfall in our budget, which has actually given us a lot of unhappiness. The matter that our Director General as an accounting officer is handling
with the public, with the National Treasury, and so on. It's a matter, Madam Chairperson, that I would also indicate that because we are supported by a Department of State, ourselves as commissioners don't interact on the financial matters, even with Treasury. We basically get briefed when the caricature come from those discussions. We only heard when there are cuts, that there are cuts, because we have not yet been included in a process that requires us to interact with our budget. I do want to say, because my colleague Mike is here so that he can hear, because he can hear me making this point in public. We are aware that the National Assembly and this portfolio committee, for instance, Madam Chairperson, did take a decision that we need to extend our scope to local government. But that requires, of course, legislative changes, and the Public Administration Act, which was supposed to make that change, finally dropped that proposal there. And we don't have a legal framework for us, because the legal framework as of now require us to operate at national and provincial level. And it's a matter that we would leave to the committee to look at in future. But we do want to indicate that should that extension also happen in the light of the capacity shortages that we have, we wouldn't be able to do anything about it, wouldn't be even able to deal with the stakeholders like SALGA and municipalities, which are about 284, all of them. So it's a point that we really want to say. It's not because of lack of unwillingness or unwillingness to operate to that. There are those challenges that are there. Madam Chairperson, I'm not going to deal with this issue further, other than to say part of the problems I've already highlighted that relates to our own functioning is the issue of some legislative changes that we want made, and we are in discussion with the executive and with the committee about those legislative discussions, and there is some progress on that, but today is not a date for me to be presenting on legislation and discussing that, other than to say it's a matter that we would want it to be finalized as soon as possible so that it can help us functioning very soon. Madam Chairperson, one issue I would like just to highlight for you to check. In the National Development Plan, there is a recommendation about the role of the Commission. As you know, through the history of the Commission, from being a Commission of Administration to the current Commission, there has been a change that removed the Commission, unlike many commissions throughout the world, from being an appointing commission to being an advisory and recommendatory commission. And the NDP tried to introduce an element of saying that the chairperson of the commission and the provincial commissioners should participate in the appointments of at least the DG in the presidency and also the DGs in the offices of the premier in the provinces, which would introduce an element of making the commission to participate in appointments in a particular way. We just want to say if that change were to be realized, it must be just understood that it would require again legislative changes insofar as it would also conflict with our mandate of hearing grievances of HODs, including those HODs, if we were to get involved in that. It's a point that we're saying that we know government has accepted that plan, but its implementation, the committee would need to monitor and deal with it. And in conclusion, I would like to thank you again, Chairperson, for giving us this opportunity to make this presentation, and hope that we will be able to participate in dealing with the issues that relates to the effective functioning of the Commission, and we appreciate the fact that we've got a lot of support that has been coming through this Commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for an informative presentation. Members, I'll give you an opportunity to raise clarity, seeking questions and comments. But this is an anachronic. Your slide 26, while members are preparing. It's going to put you more in a bed.
Well, I'll only blame the...
I'm telling you, now you're interfering. I can see why you're not liked by many. Now you're interfering. The NDP now is putting you into more trouble. Okay, members? Okay, I'll start with Malisoma.
Thank you so much, honorable member. I've forgotten, I'm looking even the other way. Chair, firstly, they are born the presentation, that's one. In terms of voting in Zani, Zene Wopi. I hope, Chair, moving forward also in terms of the recommendations that you make, if we can get a schedule to say these are the recommendations and these are the recommendations that the departments adhere to, with a very clear understanding that the recommendations remain recommendations, but also the other column should also indicate the implications thereof. Because I have heard you that you put three words to say the quality, the professionality, the impartial, and all those things of your recommendations, but also legalistic, what are the implications of non-implementation of that, and financially also. Why I'm raising that, Chair, one would like to have a feel in terms of the issues that you are dealing with, i.e. Dealing with corruption in terms of your areas of focus, just picking one, to say, is there any impact on that? i.e. implementation of predetermined objectives by the departments, especially the DGs, and also the remedies that you would have proposed or recommended. That is one, Chair. Two, Chair, one would be very much interested. Actually, Chair, you spoke about the independency of the structure, individual commissioners, the provincial commissioners, and all that. But what one I would like to know, in the whole scheme of this independency and all that, how do you function as a collective? Because I foresee some challenges there of human nature, if I may say that. How do you augment that? Maybe linked to that is the question of saying you also spoke about different criteria of expectations. I don't know whether the qualifications or what appointment of provisional commissioners. I understand the law part of it, but practically as you function moving forward, where is the problem? Is this the quality of the output of the provincial ones? And also if it's the quality, what informs you, because you're also a commissioner. If I say you, I mean the foursome appointed at the national level to say that, and what have you been doing about that? Let alone that I know what you have suggested from outside to take care of. Three, Chair. I know that you are very skeptical, informed by the capacity, if I may use that word, to take the responsibility of local government. How would you avoid where province A with the municipality B lodge a complaint to you from the municipality? How have you been addressing those issues generally now? Because everything happens at the local level. Nothing happens at the space. I heard what you were saying, that you also, with respect what our view was, but and implications of also extending that mandate. But also, Chair, on that one, I'm coupling that one with that the acting chair and the collective, they are aware that the PAM Act has been signed.
notwithstanding that it hasn't been phased in terms of the operationality, but however, we have raised it even last year, to say you must be also be ready to respond to that if it comes to life.
Chair, can I, so that I don't be seen taking every question, because the other point you have raised, the other one, Chair, in terms of the appointment of the, if I'm not mistaken, Chair, the issue of the appointment of the, or filling of vacancy rather. But the point that I want to raise, there was an issue that they raised, Chair. I want to check what implications, how have you been doing your work lacking with the two provinces that have been not filled as yet, and the implications thereof. And it's our role that also we need to work on that one, but I'm just raising so that we can have a broader, much appreciation thereof. Or do you have any idea in those provinces where that one is? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Deputy Chairperson, now I'm not going to ask you about administrative questions and administrative issues of your office. All I'm interested to know is your operational part of firstly, the mandate is to ensure that there is effectiveness and efficiency within the public service. And things stand now with many problems within the public service, like where you identify the low morale of staff. And what I need to know from you, I've seen in page 7, you have indicated the department. Okay, the facilitation of structured debates within different spheres. But how have that been proactive in terms of workshopping the departments and ensuring that operationally they carry the message from where you have done the workshop with the HODs to the people on the plant level, at the ground level, the person that is sweeping, the person who's an administrator, in order for them to understand what is it to be a public servant and what is it to carry out the mandate of being a public servant. And how do you ensure that it happens? Because at the current juncture, we are sitting with a public service which has got a document of its own, the public service charter. But the people on the ground do not understand the public service charter. The head of department also do not understand the public service charter, which has got separate clauses, separate articles, where it states the responsibilities of the public servant and the responsibility of the employer. But they too do not find each other, and it creates a dent within the public service where we get no service, little or no service at all, or there is no improvement. So where does PSC feature in this problem? And okay, the 14 positions that you've indicated, Malisuma has asked you about it. But I want you to be very clear as to how do you want this committee to assist you. Because this particular department is very important in ensuring that whoever is not doing their work, at least they are identified. As much as you do not have a direct impact in terms of carrying out the recommendation, it's still up to them if they implement the recommendation or they do not.
However, it is very much important for your department to always provide us with a scope or the list or the data of departments where you have recommended that 1, 2, 3 must be done in order to improve the service to the people. And those departments have disregarded you altogether. If we can get that data, perhaps we will also be in a clear position as to what's going on. Okay, and then there is a wording, the issue of integrity and corruption. I don't want to talk to anti-corruption because that is being dealt with at many levels in the department. But the issue of integrity on its own is very important on how one carries out their duties. Because the integrity is not just about you reporting at 8, knocking off at 4. When you are getting assessed, when you are assessing the department, they are assessing the people on the ground. But on assessing them, do they really look into the realities of the job? If you are a nurse, do you really look into how many patients have you treated a day? What is the satisfaction of those patients? However way the assessment is structured, is the assessment carried out thoroughly? Because now we find many complaints from basic services like clinics, schools, police stations, social development. But these people, there is no one complaining about them at a higher level. It's people on the ground that are complaining, and there's no one developing a link from the people to the higher level as to say we need to correct the type of assessment or we need to correct the duties or the job description of these people. So I need you to also zoom into that, and if you have done it, to which provinces and what have you actually, what are the mechanisms that you have used and they have went properly to other provinces? Which means is assessment tools applied to many departments as they vary. And then the local government extension, I don't want you to give up on that. I heard you when you were talking about it, but you sounded as if you are giving up. I don't want you to give up on that because local government is the one that is spread across. It's actually the core of government. So on that one, you need to pester as much as you can. If you need the committee to assist you, you need to be on the committee and ask the committee all the time. You need to extend to local government because that's where the problem is. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Your presentation has raised so many questions in my mind, but I won't do that because we don't have sufficient time for that. Just a couple of things that I think are important. Honorable Mendes sort of touched on it, but you skimmed over it. A question of morale in the Commission. Throughout your presentation, there's this undercurrent of dissatisfaction, unhappiness with the status quo, and some things are being done, and you're looking forward to those changes in terms of getting this. My question really goes to, is this something that is only at your level, or is it something that has already filtered down among the commissioners at the bottom? And if so, how are you dealing with it? Because these would obviously impact on how effective the commission can be. The other one that I'd like to sort of highlight is it touches on this. On your slide 24, where you're talking about the 2015-2016 shortfall, and you conclude this slide with this, to me, very worrying statement. This simply means that the PSC will not have money for projects, as funds available will only be sufficient to cater for running costs and salaries. And then the red light goes on and say, well, if there are running costs and salaries, what are they doing? They're not going to do projects because they have a shortfall of budget. Does it mean that for this year, they'll only be there to draw the salaries and pay for the rent and stuff like that? Could you just clarify that for me so that I can have a sense of where the real problem lies? There's another little issue there. Yes. On slide 26, right at the top, you make the point about the issue of reappointment versus renewal. I'm assuming this is for commissioners. In other words, the appointment of a commissioner, and if it's there, stuff like that. So there is no facility for renewal. If I'm right, if I'm understanding you right, my question would be, why would you want to have capacity to renew? Because that could impact on the issue of independence that you have been talking about so lucidly this morning. My sense would be the reappointment thing forces the commission to go out into the marketplace and invite people who would like to. But if we're going to have a facility for renewal, it means some people in the commission already could have their contracts renewed because they are doing well. Wouldn't that impact on their being independent, because their independence would then be influenced by the fact that their contracts have been renewed, so they have a sense of entitlement. I'm doing well, so I don't have to worry about this. It's just something I trust maybe you could clarify for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Public Service Commission speaks of itself, or it likes to see itself as the champion of public service excellence. Now, we are obviously concerned about the state of the public service in South Africa. We are concerned about the increases in the wage bill. The fact that in the public service, it seems to me as if the unions have got such a power that government, even that whether it can afford it or not, must approve of increases of 2.2% above the inflation rate and things like that. Now, I think it's therefore commonplace to say that the productivity in the public sector, efficiency and so on is a huge concern to South Africans. And these are all topics that I pick up in the correspondence, the legislation, the mandate of the Public Service Commission, that they must, this is their core business, to monitor this, etc. But as I sit here, I'm concerned about the Public Service Commission. On the one hand, the Public Service Commission comes time and again and said, please, you know, we're under-resourced, our budget is far too small to achieve on this wonderfully ambitious mandate of us, etc., etc. But then I pick up from the Public Service Commission a kind of tiredness. The low morale that they are concerned about in the public service seems to, you know, also be present in this room here today. So, and my question is just, how can the people that want to foster excellence, if you yourself is tired, if the coach of the team, of the sports team is tired and comes late, or, you know, that is a little bit not focused, how can you expect of the team to be focused? And what I'm seeing in the longer term in South Africa is that other entities are being created to take over some of the tasks which I believe should rest with the public service. If the public service did a good job of monitoring and evaluation, there probably would not have been a need for a whole ministry on monitoring, or a whole department on monitoring and evaluation. If the public service gave guidance in terms of minimum qualifications for senior management staff, then Treasury would not have had to issue certain of these regulations, etc. Or the Minister of Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs would not have had to, you know, issue certain regulations and somewhere I'm thinking that the Public Service Commission is letting things slip. And I'm wondering, if I also look at the reports that we're getting, is it not because the Public Service Commission has got its focus wrong? If you focus just on corruption, or then anti-corruption, if you just focus on misconduct, on poor discipline, and so on, all the things that are wrong, is that the way then to take the public service forward? And I would love to get the comment from the Public Service Commission, you know, senior members that are here today, to just tell us, you know, is this really their only mandate? How can you promote excellence by concentrating to such a large extent on the failures? Yes, as an opposition party, we make a lot about the corruption, we make a lot about, you know, the wrong people being appointed in senior positions, etc., financial misconduct, etc. But that's our task, I believe. My question is the task of the Public Service Commission not slightly wider? And then I'm concerned, if you already have limited resources, is the development of a citizen's toolkit and those things, is that really where your focus should be? So I would love to hear your views on this, because I am picking up that perhaps there's a lack of focus, and where there is some focus, that the focus may be misplaced, and that I'm not the only one perhaps of this opinion, because it seems to me government is setting up other structures now to do what I think originally, when the constitution was drafted 20 years ago, that that was envisaged to perhaps be part of the public service commission. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I've got a number of questions. Firstly, you slip in on page 25 a reference to the possibility of extending your mandate to local government, and that this would require additional resources. I'd really like you to expand on that, because that sounds like a potentially enormous, complicated, and very costly empire-building project, if it is going to cover every single municipality in the country. How much would it cost? How many posts would be involved? And what are some of the other repercussions in terms of capacitating those post fillers and developing new monitoring and evaluation instruments? So that's my first question, because I think it's really important, actually. Then secondly, in September last year, the late Minister Chobani said that legislation was planned to strengthen the powers of the Public Service Commission. I presume that forms part of the draft Public Service Commission Amendment Bill to which you refer in the presentation. But I'd specifically like to know, what amendments would you support to strengthen your powers of enforcement, which has been an ongoing subject of discussion in this committee, especially with regards to the imposition of penalties for non-compliance? And then Mr. Ntembu actually also indicated in a previous engagement with this committee that that proposed amendment bill would empower the Public Service Commission to enforce directives related to human resource management, such as irregular appointments and disciplinary procedures. Is that still the case? Then next, do you support the National Development Plan's proposal for the creation of a super director general in the presidency? Again, last time Mr. Ntembu said that this was something that would be the subject of further study, because it's a concept that would be borrowed from overseas, as I remember it. Has the study commenced, and what are the time frames for its completion? Next, are you in favour of the National Development Plan suggestion that the PSC should be involved in appointing senior managers, or do you think that this would create a conflict with your watchdog role? And then finally, I was interested to hear you mention the Carter Asmar report from 2006 or 2007, I forget which, on the Chapter 9 institutions, I say, I was interested to hear you mention it, and I'd be interested to know how seriously you've taken those recommendations. The three which stuck out to me were the ASMA report recommended that the process of selecting and appointing new commissioners should take into account the need for staggering so as to avoid institutional memory loss, and at the time he mentioned that this was a particular concern given that the present commissioner's terms of office were coming to an end the following year. Is this an ongoing matter of concern for you? Then secondly, that report also recommended a reduction in the number of commissioners from 14 to between 5 and 7. And finally, the ASMA report recommended that commissioners located in the provinces should play a greater advocacy role by actively promoting the commission's work in the legislatures. And I noticed that on slide 17, you say that at provincial level, coordination is uneven and inadequate. So I'd like to know exactly how far you've got in implementing that recommendation. Thanks.
Thank you,
Chair.
I nearly gave Masha.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of the structural independence is a cause for concern following the report. During the appointment of commissioners, or let me put it this way, the issue of the structural independence seems to be a concern generally. So by implication, that gives me an understanding that even at the level of the province, at the level of the provinces, the issue becomes a concern of those who are appointed at the provincial level. The Premier and the Speaker, I suppose, are involved in the processes of such appointment. And therefore, there would be this element of indebtedness of a commissioner to the Premier or the Speaker, or even both of them. What I want to check, Chair, is how then do you try to have a mechanism to sustain the independence of the commissioners at the level of the province? Does this have an impact on the uneven requirements as far as competences are concerned that has mentioned before? And does it also have a bearing on the reports not being engaged at the level of the provinces? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your engagement, honorable members. I want to propose that we allow the Deputy Chairperson to just on a very high level summarize and provide us with written answers, because I doubt if we can say they should respond now, they will not give us adequate answers. So let's give them time to go back, reflect, because issues that we are talking about today reflect on the capacity of the institution. We have that capacity. That's what members want to establish. It talks about the present. It talks about the future as well. You know, your expansion to local government, resources that you're going to require, because, you know, a follow-up question to that would be, provide us with a costed plan, you know. Currently, you operating on limited resources, but then when you move to, when you expand your mandate to local government, then it means a serious change in your allocation of resources, you know. I have also noted few administrative challenges that I personally feel that the portfolio committee to a certain extent would be able to assist the commission moving forward. If I may, just quickly maybe go through them. If there's anything that I've left out, to summarize, Deputy Chair, yes. But you can also indicate if there's anything that I've left out. I firstly also want to appreciate and also indicate that I'm humbled by your opening remarks to actually having said that for the first time in the history of the existence of the Commission, it's for the first time that you are given an opportunity to come and present on the functioning of the Commission before the portfolio. To me, that translates to maturity. It means 20 years of our existence, we are maturing, we are going somewhere. The second issue, which has been a worrying factor for the 11 months that we've been working together, your element of being supported by Public Service Department. You're not supposed to be supported by Public Service Department, especially in this 20 years of maturity. In your written submissions, I also want to also tell us how do you then see yourself being free from this independence. I think members also spoke about that. I'm just reiterating. And then I am noting this because I think it's an issue that we can also raise with institutions that support democracy. Well, we've done that before, especially on your budgets being transferred directly to yourselves. We've done that. Maybe one needs to make a follow-up with written letters. You spoke about sector reports not being systematically coordinated. I've seen this. I don't know how did it skip you. There's a page that forms part of the presentation. I don't know if members are aware of this. The heading says proposed clusters to be serviced by nationally based commissioners. I will write a letter to the chair of chairs, and then I'll refer him to this list. That portfolios that have been clustered here, they should know about the support that they can get. I think it's part of way forward. Maybe what is lacking here is contact. If we can get contact details for commissioners responsible for various clusters. You spoke about the uneven approach with regard to the standardization of adverts for recruiting commissioners. You'll have to advise us on how the assets should look like, because you'll be best, you know, you'll be more empowered, more than ourselves, and that can be shared through speakers forums, we can then do that. But we'll depend on you also to give us the structuring of the assets. We will also try our level best to foster your relationship with the presidency, because we feel that most of the issues that you are grappling with, it's only the president who can resolve them. So we know that the law prescribes that you should meet with the president twice a year, and then I think I'm aware that it hasn't happened in this term of office. So we want you to, we will try and foster that relationship. I spoke about your budget being sub-program through public service. The provinces to address the unevenness of inadequacy of institutions supporting democracy. We will then call all provinces to come and report, but we don't want to just call provinces for the sake of calling them. If you can just be specific on which provinces are not complying with this issue. Okay. Maybe in the near future, because of your expansion of your scope of work, if now it's going to now being extended to local government, it would mean more allocation of resources and, of course, changing of policy. In the near future, if you can prepare that presentation, both on the amendments within your bill and a cost plan then thereof, what are your projections? My last issue is on slide 19, your structure. All the boxes, do they have warm bodies? Page 19, I think 10 to other space, but page 19. It's 19, eh? Yeah, you know? DG, integrity and anti-corruption, 51 posts, DG, monitor. Do they have warm bodies? If not, are you going to fill them within this current financial year? Have you budgeted for that? But those are the questions that you can respond to in your written submissions. But I'm just going to give you less than 5 seconds to just summarize and then also make a commitment as to when are you going to give us a detailed responses from what members have raised earlier on. Thanks.
Yes. Thank you very much, Chairperson. We really appreciate this opportunity. In my response, Chairperson, I'm going to break down these issues that we raised today and present them back to you because we have supporting documents. I would like to take the challenge that has been raised by the members that we should come and fully address the issue of the independence of the Commission, how it has dealt with it from as a collective, how to work on that, and what it means institutionally and individually for it, and the proposal that we make. I'll take the point that that Ntombela has also raised on the issues relating to the renewal issues and the questions of independence, and address some of the proposals that we have made in that regard. So I would say that the issue of independence, I like the uptake that the members have taken on it, and I would really think that we should get time to discuss it fully and would address, obviously, because we've discussed them, and address the issues that Honorable Kado has also raised in that regard. Secondly, I do think we're not depressed, Madam Chairperson, and we don't have any low morality about these matters. It's matters that we have seriously considered and we have addressed and we have come with proposals. Some of those proposals are with the Office of the President, are with our Minister, some of them with the Commission. I would like, again, a day where we are going to come and present both on these issues of conditions of service for commissioners, the roles of commissioners, the role of the chairperson, the role of the deputy chairperson, and the kind of competences that are required from those persons, because we have discussed and adopted by the commission, and we have documents that we can attach to deal with that. Certainly, chairperson, I do want to leave with this point that Honorable Fandewa Steyn has raised. And it's a matter that we should discuss also the mandate of the commission. I appreciate the committee has seen us putting just what the constitution says we do, but I would like to get an opportunity to come before the members and discuss the full mandate of the commission as we understand it, as we have unpacked it quite clearly, both in terms of legal opinions and its practical implication in this. And Mr. Osei, I can assure you, you will find that there is no lack of focus in what we do. The areas that we've chosen are the key areas that are practically affecting the public service today. And for ourselves, we would find it strange if a government would not have its internal monitoring and evaluation processes of itself. But our own job is not set by departments, it's set by the Constitution, and therefore requires us to over and above what government does for its own purposes, even if you look at the indicators that we set and the areas we put and the records we find, that on the same
approach, for example, if you look at poverty, on the same poverty that would be monitored by a government department and how we would monitor it as an independent, you would find vast differences and the kind of information that we would put on those matters. So we feel that the role that has been set for us as a constitutional institution has not been impacted upon by departments. What departments are doing are what any ordinary self-respecting government would do to monitor whether it's making an impact on those things that it has set. Ourselves, the Constitution indicates the areas that we would set, and I would like to be able to be given a chance to present those areas and how we deal with them and how we deal with them relating to the government and to be able to deal with those. Apart from that, I thank really members the way they have taken and handled this matter this morning. And Madam Chairperson, I can assure you within 2 weeks we would be able to present the information to you because we have the reports and we have the things, and I've taken extensive notes about that, and we'll present you with documents and also with a draft agenda of some of the issues that we'd like discussed. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. 2 weeks is too far. We normally give 48 hours, no? 2 weeks in place. It's 48 hours. Okay, we'll give you until next week Tuesday. It's not bad. Because normally we insist on 48 working hours. Okay, can we then move to agenda item number 2? It's again the PSC briefing us on the financial misconduct, on the non-compliance with treasury regulations and disciplinary cases in the public sector. Who is going to take us through the second presentation? Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. There were some technical issues. I think with respect to this presentation, I think we'll have to explain the mandate.
with respect to financial misconduct. I think the mandate will be drawn from the Public Finance Management Act, read together with the Treasury regulations on the financial misconduct. And then from that mandate, the PSC reports annually on the status of financial misconduct reported by departments to determine whether departments are adhering to applicable prescripts and public servants and public servants are held accountable. So that's briefly the context in which this presentation will be made. And just as an introduction again, in the last 2 years, we had a roundtable on financial misconduct because we realized in our work on financial misconduct that there was no shared understanding on financial misconduct, even though the PFMA and the Treasury regulations are very clear. So we had that roundtable to discuss what constitutes financial misconduct in the public service, and we will be working with Treasury and DPSA that if need be, the regulations and the PFMA needs to be amended to include those issues that we have common understanding on. With respect to Section 81 of the PFMA, it indicates circumstances in which the accounting officer will commit a financial misconduct, which will be included in Section 38, 39, 40, 41, and 42. So if an accounting officer violates those sections, then that will be considered as financial misconduct, and the executive authority will have to act. And in Section 44, any other official other than the accounting office who commits misconduct, then the accounting officer must act on those officials. And with respect to present regulation, it indicates that when financial misconduct has happened, disciplinary case must take place. And at the conclusion of the disciplinary case, the accounting officer must report, must report to the executive authority, the DPSA, and the Public Service Commission on the outcome. And they don't have to wait for the whole year to report on all cases. But as soon as the case is concluded, they must report to these three structures, the executive authority, DPSA, and PSC. And the report should cover the name and rank of the official against whom the proceedings were instituted, the charges indicating the financial misconduct the official is alleged to have committed, the findings of the disciplinary hearing, any sanctions imposed on the official, and any further action to be taken against the official, including criminal proceedings and civil proceedings. So that is what they must report as soon as the case has been finalized. Now, since 2001, the PSC has established and maintained a database of reported cases of financial misconduct, even though we've been receiving those cases on an annual basis and analyzing those cases. And the PSC verifies the information provided by departments in those cases where insufficient information is provided, and it also monitors and investigates adherence to procedures through data verification visits to sample departments. And in order to deepen the analysis, the PSC developed a reporting format. And in addition to the Treasury regulations, the PSC required departments to report on the salary level of employees, the amount involved, the recovery of the loss in the particular previous financial year, and the reasons for the increase or decrease in the financial misconduct. One other aspect which we haven't put in this presentation is also to determine how much money is no loss to the state. Because when the cost of the financial misconduct is highlighted, included there may not be a loss to the state. For example, if a road is built and you can see that the road is there, but the prescripts were not followed by the senior managers or the accounting officer, like supply chain prescripts, it will be considered financial misconduct. And the cost will be the cost of that road. But because the road is already done, so that money is no loss to the state. But somewhere else there may be a loss to the state. In tracking the trends, you can see that the total number of cases reported since 2001 financial year to 2012-13 financial year is 10,483 cases that have been recorded. And as you can see, there may be an upward trend of those cases, even though in 2013 financial year there was a decline. But there is an upward trend of those cases that are reported. And for the financial years 2011-12 and 2012-13, national departments and provinces that reported the highest number of cases, you can see there. The highest in 11-12 amongst national departments was SAPS, followed by Justice, Defense, and Defense, and then the rest were smaller. And then among the provinces, it's KZN, and then Gauteng Province, and then Limpopo, and then in the following year, as you can see, Gauteng Province reported the highest number of cases. It shot up to 189, and Western Cape came in with 105, and then KZN is still there, but of course downward to 80. So that's the trend as far as the cases in national departments and provincial departments. And then as soon as we started tracking the issues of salary levels, this figure indicates a total number of financial misconduct cases reported since 2007, where the salary level was indicated, because in other years we didn't look at the salary level. But when we started looking at it, 4,831 cases were reported between salary levels 1 to 8, and then 922 to middle management service, and then 291 to senior management service, which is a cause for concern. But as you can see, much of the cases are reported at that lower level, between 1 and 8. With respect to senior managers, again, here you can see an upward trend of senior managers, which is a worrying trend, because senior managers play a critical role in the promotion and maintenance of sound financial management and are primary stewards of the public resources in their respective departments. So if it is them now who are getting involved in financial misconduct, it must be a worrying issue. With respect to disciplinary actions instituted, as you can see in the diagram, out of those 10,483 finalized cases of financial misconduct, employees were found guilty of financial misconduct in 8,696, which constitute 83%. And then 8% of those cases, those officials were not found guilty, and then 9% either cases were withdrawn through lack of evidence, etc. Sanctions imposed, as you can see in the diagram, final written warning is the biggest sanction that is being imposed. From 2008-09 financial year, it hovers around more than 30% except only in 2011-12. And then the next one is a combination of sanctions, which might be suspensions without pay, combined together with final written warning. And then discharge, as you can see, it's 11%, went up to 21%, 23%, 24%, and came down to 30%. The sanctions imposed in disciplinary cases are at the discretion of the chairpersons of those disciplinary hearings, having considered the merits of the case and the mitigating or and aggravating circumstances. And then reports submitted by the department since 2001 to financial year show that there are inconsistencies in sanctions imposed for cases of similar nature. Maybe through the creation of the Public Administration Ethics, Integrity and Disciplinary Technical Assistance Unit, which is covered in PAMA, it might go a long way in ensuring that there is standardization in different departments and even in provinces so that there is consistency when it comes to sanctions. And an example of such inconsistency is whereby an employee was found guilty of theft, of an amount of 33.34, and the sanction imposed was a discharge, whilst an employee who committed fraud with a larger amount involved were issued with a sanction of final written warning. So that shows the inconsistency, serious inconsistency in that regard. So the department should make sure that the chairpersons they appoint are capable and credible, and they can make sure that the sanction fits the charge. With respect to criminal proceedings, out of 8,696 employees that were found guilty of financial misconduct, criminal proceedings were instituted in 2,579 cases. And not all acts of financial misconduct, I think this is the most important. Not all acts of financial misconduct, such as gross negligence and financial mismanagement, will constitute criminal acts. So there are those acts which are criminal in nature and others are not criminal in nature. And again, there's inconsistency as far as departments. Sometimes there are criminal cases and then departments don't lay charges. And in some departments, they lay charges. And when they lay charges, we see a reduction in the number of cases. With respect to the cost of financial misconduct, you can see the trend in that because we started tracking the cost from 2004 financial year coming to date. So in 2010-11, actually, the huge cost of financial misconduct was incurred during the 3 years from 2009-10 to 2011-12. If you put all those the cost there, it's almost more than 60% throughout the entire period that were recorded of financial misconduct. And then the red there indicates the amount of money that had been recovered. The cost of financial misconduct, just to continue the test, was the highest in the Department of Arts and Culture, which was 131.8 million, and which constituted 49% in the 9-10 financial year. And in the 10-11 financial year, it was a drastic increase in the provinces, which was almost 673.5 million. And constituted almost 90%. And then in 11-12, the highest was in the Department of Human Settlement, which was almost 100 million. The total cost of financial misconduct, which was tagged since 2001 to financial year to date, is just about 2 billion. and the PSC has since 4 or 5 financial years requested departments to report annually on the amount recovered from employees found guilty of the financial misconduct. And from that time to date, to 2012-13, departments reported an amount close to 400 million rand, which was recovered, meaning that about 1.6 billion has not been recovered. Though, of course, within that 1.6 billion, there might be no loss to the state. So the recovery is continuous in the sense that departments are still making mechanisms to recover that amount of money. Though, of course, the recovery is very slow. There's a huge amount of money which has not been recovered. And if recovered, it may go a long way in the delivery of certain services which are impacted or negative. Now, we realized, we observed that most departments do not report on the outcome of finalized cases, although the PSC continuously reminds those departments to report to it. So what we have been doing is we have been taking the cases of finalized financial misconduct at the end of the financial year. So we are now going to track them on monthly basis to make sure that they report cases as and when they are concluded. And that will make the departments to make sure that they deal with the real issues of financial misconduct. And to improve the quality of reports submitted to the PSC, a reporting format has been developed, which is on the website, which departments can use. And the PSC, as I've indicated earlier, conducts data verification visits to departments to make sure that the cases they report on are clear cases of financial misconduct. And the number of finalized cases of financial misconduct reported is low when compared to the high rate of unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as the rate of non-compliance within the public service. If you check Auditor General's report on annual basis, you see the amount of unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure is high. But when you look at the number of cases, it's low. But maybe because if the amount is unauthorized, it still needs to go through Parliament, either through SCOPA, to check whether that amount needs to be authorized or not. And if Parliament doesn't authorize, that's when it becomes a case of financial misconduct. In conclusion, overall, there is a need for departments to put in place effective systems that would enable them to finalize all cases of financial misconduct effectively and to keep accurate data to identify trends. So they have to be recorded as and when they are concluded, and the database must be created of those cases so that even within the department, they must monitor the trends of these cases and then come up with mechanisms to prevent financial misconduct. Failure to put such systems in place will continue to undermine efforts to deal effectively with acts of corruption. And the PSC has called upon accounting officers to be hands-on so that they don't leave this matter to junior officials within the department. And PSC has requested them to ensure that fully completed and accurate reports are submitted to the PSC in compliance with treasury regulations and by the due date. And then measures are implemented to ensure that cases where the state has suffered losses or damages as a result of financial misconduct are reported to SAPS. And the MPET results of 2013 showed that 90% of departments assessed in respect of finalization of disciplinary cases are not finalizing disciplinary cases within the prescribed period of 90 days by the which is in public service regulations and agreed to also. also at the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Chamber. It was also found that most of the departments do not have capacity, the skills, and the skills to finalize cases in stipulated time frames. And cases are not captured on PESAL, which also makes it difficult to monitor how departments handle disciplinary cases. Because sometimes a person is in Department 1, A, and then when he's charged of disciplinary, when he's charged to undergo disciplinary hearing, the person resigns and joins another department. So we need to make sure that it's tracked on, the charges are captured on PESAL, or even the case is finalized on PESAL, and then we follow that that case, wherever that official goes to. And the technical assistance unit, as I've indicated, will go a long way in ensuring that there is standardization in terms of disciplinary cases, and even on cases of financial misconduct, and even on the sanctions, that there is some standardization. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, if you may recall, you're welcome. We understand that you were up somewhere. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for coming. This morning we set the 20 years of our existence reflects maturity. That came as a result of the way opening remarks like a chairperson. But members, I think you will agree with me. You know, EPSC, this presentation in particular, maybe next year or in the near future when you come back, I also want to slightly align myself with what Vestazen said this morning, that it seems like the morale of everybody is low, you know, even the way you are presenting, Commissioner Mike, you are not confident today, you know. It's as if something is not right. It took you more than 7 minutes to take the platform. You know, when you present, it's as if, or maybe because of you are talking about financial misconduct, we have to talk about these things. And, you know, I've listened to you, and you are more of complaining than giving us solutions. Look, now we don't know what to do. But you exist because of the Constitution. Now, as we move forward, especially on this issue, in the next presentation, the Constitution allows you, the Chapter 10, Public Service Administration, Public Service Commission, Chapter 10, 196, 4C. To propose measures to ensure effective and efficient performance within the public service. Maybe we need to unpack that to understand what does that mean for the public service. Because for me, it would mean that you also have the right to propose legislation. Why are we still complaining about reports on outcomes, people being maybe economical about information or not wanting to report, people resigning, running away from accountability, and not long you see them in other departments again, in more senior positions from where they were. Why don't we have like a legislation that will say, that will then enforce the turnaround time in terms of cases? We want cases, because cases are different. Ne? You categorize them. You say financial misconduct, okay, financial misconduct in terms of this and that, we regard this as minor cases. For an example, you said a person was charged for 30 rands, and he was 33 rands, ne? And was dismissed. But you find that people who have we have done serious misconduct, but they are still in the system. Why don't we have that regulation? You are in a position to do that. You're in a position to do that. Why don't you, let's just regulate and say cases must be dealt with within 3 months. You know, this thing of cases again, it involves money, because some cases are being dealt with externally. The lawyers that come in there, who pays for that? And who's benefiting from those lawyers? So it's just a chain of corruption that we can cut at some point if we are serious about transforming public service. So we just say cases of, we categorize them and say these cases, they don't need to be dealt with externally. Departments must have systems in place internally to deal with this type of cases. A case will be outsourced if it's a case of a particular nature, you know. Then we know that we have cut it, we have done something. This thing, this suspension and all, it's also contributing on the huge wage bill that we're all complaining about. Because people are suspended with full benefits. Some cases never get to be resolved. They come back. We have paid lawyers. We have paid them while they were at home. We had to get people coming, acting on their positions. So the state must, in fact, pay 3 times. So if we regulate and we are serious about that, that can be resolved. Yeah, I think I'll pause here for now. That's my proposal. Let's go to 196C. Let's propose measures and see what happens. I think we'll get some members.
Thank you, Chair. Probably, Chair, I'll align with myself with your suggestion, but only to say that what you are raising, Chair, we raised it last time, and that's why my worry is that nobody does the ticking of issues that we raised. Yes, when they were doing it, I know the SA also was invited by mistake at that time. They made the press, and we did talk to say, make suggestions, legislative changes also. And we're repeating it here, but I'm sure now I'm going to ask you when you come back for your reporting, in terms of scheduled reporting, in terms of compliance and all that, because it worries me that, and because when you come here and you being so depressed and all that, you are so toothless and everything, you know, but we suggest and you don't come and challenge us how far can we push ourselves as the portfolio committee in terms of assisting and all that. But also other issues in terms of the fluctuation of financial misconduct, so to say. For me, I would like to know, or probably it's more also of an extended power that we think that we need to play a meaningful role in terms of appointing the senior management in terms of the BGs. Because they sign performance contracts, one of the issues that in terms of our areas of focus of this current administration is to have a clean governance. Even the NDP talks to that. There is a lifespan of cases. And what happens then is an issue of management more than also having more legislation and all that. Probably then the question or the issue that you raised when you're debating the earlier item, probably also there are issues that needs to be elevated at the presidency level, so to say, because which means there is no movement. Hence, I raise the issue that give us a template that says these are the recommendations that were made. These ones have been accepted in good faith, and these ones, what are the implications of? And I think that's where I was raising the issue. This last, my point, Chair, is that I don't subscribe to the notion that if you don't follow the prescripts of financial supply chain management, as it may, there is something wrong with that, because it is correctly going to be perceived that you are doing some sort of a specialized javelin of some kind. Because why do you cut corners unless there's a disaster? So I'm saying, as a commission also, you need just to strengthen that one. Don't say because it doesn't, because there is a project on the ground, but why do you cut corners? Because there's something. And we're living in a world where we don't trust anything. But we do have regulations that we need to comply on, and I'm saying let's deal with those issues. Probably also in terms of the provinces, Chair, I'll suggest that when we invite the DGs, provincial DGs, is to say which are those most culprit provinces, so that we can try also to assist them, because I know that it does help. Everybody coming to Cape Town doesn't like to come to portfolio committees. It will make a difference, probably, hopefully. Because we have said that DPSA, even MNE, will raise the issue in terms of the turnaround of cases, of disciplinary cases. And I'm saying you're raising it as a concern under this one, but you need to pay much closer attention to that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair, Honorable Chairperson. It's a sad story. It is so sad in that it's like when everything goes wrong about your children, and usually they don't blame the father, they blame the mother, and say the mother didn't brought up the kids correctly. But having said that, Chairperson, I would like to thank the commission, because of, you know, allowing yourself to come to the committee and report, irrespective of what the constitution is saying. Because according to the constitution, you say something totally different. But you allow yourself to come to us and inform us about these stories, which are very sad. You know, why the story becomes sad is that a thief is not written that this is an ANC, this is a DA. A thief is a thief. A thief is not written, which is, this is Lamini, this is Zimande, this is Mabe, this is what. A thief is a thief. And a thief, you can identify it through the pigmentation skill, the color of your skin. If somebody is a thief, is a thief. But it becomes so sad that indeed what we are seeing, that misconduct regarding the finances, the statement, the taxpayer's money, when the ball has to be kicked, it kicks that straight to the president. Now, Honorable Chairperson, I think there's an omission. I think us as a committee, we need to think thoroughly, because the PSC is doing its job, but it's my feeling, there's a bottleneck somewhere, which us as the committee, we need to undo it, because they are reporting, but I'm getting a feeling like maybe that's why he's so down, because maybe he was doing his job, but every time he reports, he gets the bumping back. I'm reporting nothing is being done, and I'm reporting nothing is being done, nothing is being done. You sort of like getting discouraged. I'm looking at the monies. Hey, 2 billion rand misconduct charges are being done. Now, if you look at the powers invested in your commission, your only mistake that they've done thus far is that when you keep on reporting, you do not go back to the law, because it's the only thing that will protect you is the law, is the powers invested in you. You did not go back and say, okay, fine, I've been reporting this, whether to the national department, but what does the law say? The law says, actually, you've got the right to report it to the executive authority or the legislature, which you didn't do. That is the only mistake you made. Chairperson, chairperson, you know, I'm feeling so bad because yesterday the DA was howling and howling at us like nobody's business. And in their minds, they think that to be overtaken by the ANC because they are prophets. However, though, all that I'm asking as this committee is to unite and we fight that cancer. We unite and we help the commission to fight that. We unite and we as legislators, because my feeling is saying there is something that is missing. Something is missing. It's either in the DPSA, there is something legislatively framework that is missing, that is empowering the commission to go further. Because you can't tell them that you spend so much money collecting, investigating, and monitoring, but you're still sitting with that problem. There's something big. Maybe, Chairperson, we need to talk about this.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the report. Chairperson, I am of the opinion now that we need to find a way in which the commissioners can interact maybe with your good self. If there are undercurrents about the tensions in the House, I personally do not see any tensions, but if there's any, whether it's bottlenecks or tension, maybe they should be given an opportunity somehow to communicate with the chairperson, even if it could be on an informal basis. Maybe that could assist. Maybe the problem lies with the committee. There's not much of smiles. Everybody's serious. I don't know what is such a seriousness about. It's the first time for me to see a smile. I've been sitting next to her from morning. It's the first time for me to see a smile. So well, that is why I'm saying maybe if there could be time. Okay. Maybe the manner in which we approach the portfolio committee meetings should be looked at. Chairperson, on the slide number 9, trends on financial misconduct.
Yeah.
I just want clarity whether what we are seeing here is the. Does it suggest that the SAPC, what the SAPS, and Gauteng and Wazulu and all of that, does it suggest that they are the most corrupt? What does it say exactly? Does it say they are the most competent in terms of addressing the issues of misconduct? Mm. What exactly does it say? Because seemingly, it's open to different interpretations. So I would like to have some more clarity on that. And then, Chairperson, the second one is the issue of the appointment of chairpersons during the disciplinary cases. I think that's got a huge impact on the outcome of the case and the rate at which money is recovered. Depends on the kind of person that you put there or the quality of the person that you put there. Maybe you should come out with a strategy or a way in which the chairperson are looked at prior to the disciplinary cases so that we have a valid outcome or an outcome that could anticipate, or at least this is what I'm expecting from such a case. Lastly, sir, there are instances where quite big amounts of money are involved, 600 and something million. One would like to know more about such cases, progress on such cases, how far is it going, how long has the case been going on, and so on and so on and so on. So such cases should be monitored, I want to believe. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Like I said in the previous presentation, I think for us to start talking about the problems of the financial misconduct, we need to be first in a position of the data of the provinces. That contributes more in terms of this misconduct. Secondly, now I'm interested, is it DDG?
Commission.
Commission. I'm interested firstly to know which department within the PSC is developing or collecting this information, and the investigation that it does thereof in verifying the facts. Because I will tell you now why. I'm looking at the trends of financial misconduct where Utatu Ntombela was on page 9. I do not see provinces where you see things are not being done accordingly and money has been spent. I will make an example by Eastern Cape. In Eastern Cape, things do not get finished, schools do not get finished. Okay, roads, they could be under local government, which you are not extended to in the current juncture. But SAPS, the provincial government, you would find infrastructure that is left unfinished after business or a contractor was on site. And you ask yourself, who monitors this whole thing? And who reports that money has gone missing? Because every infrastructure is costed before it gets started. It cannot be given 50% of its infrastructural financial needs, but it doesn't get finished. And nobody talks about it, and it doesn't get reported. So my interest is, who compiles this information and verifies it if indeed it's a true reflection of each and every province or a department? Then I want to come to the issue of sanctions, because at the current moment, the legislation that the chairperson is saying when you need to look into it, it's not there. But you do pick up the issue of the inconsistency in terms of sanctions. But as the PSC, what do you then do to those departments? There is no way that a person that has stolen 33 rand, is dismissed. And we know of cases, some we see them on TV, where people get suspended with full salary, then they come back after some time. What do you do to save those souls? Because that's what I was talking about earlier. There is no link between the higher structure and the people on the ground. And why in some cases, criminal cases are not instituted? Because there will be instances where huge sums of money are missing and there are no criminal cases. Or if you Nina, as a department, you have come across a case whereby you see there is a criminal element, do you recommend that the people must go open criminal cases? Mm-hmm. And if they don't do so, what then do you do?
My last point is the point of Utatundombela. You know what's happening in Utatundombela? I was in the public sector before I came here. And fortunately, I was working with labor relations. The issue of presiding officers in cases is a very serious one. And you really need to formulate a structure of how or a guiding document of how presiding officers should be appointed. They get appointed to dismiss you. If ever you are that person who is not a favorite of someone and someone, you get dismissed on the point. They don't care about merit. These sanctions you see here, they are not the outcomes of merit. They are the outcomes of presiding officers that come with a predetermined outcome. Where in some instances there is political interference as well. But then departments on their own, they do not operate in a very partial manner. When they appoint presiding officers of cases, you will see that the merits are here, the arguments are here, this person could have been at least granted some mercy. But it won't happen because it's a certain individual that must be getting rid of. Or it's a certain individual that must be saved, even though the person, the transgression is way too much for that person to be saved. So the PSC also needs to formulate a guideline as to how do departments appoint the presiding officers of cases. Thank you.
Yeah, say amen to that. Just a little curiosity here. Slide 10 and 11. I'm just curious about this. I mean, you can make certain deductions when you look at those slides. You can make certain deductions. The number of cases, 4,831 at lower level, that clearly is because there are many more people at that level of employment. Mm. And they're probably stealing very small amounts of money. Mm. One of the interesting things would be, has an analysis been done, for instance, looking at that number 4831, how much money was involved as compared with the 291 at the senior management level, and the types of crimes being committed in terms of financial misconduct and stuff like that. It would be very, very interesting to see where this thing goes, because with regard to this other slide on 11, it's very, very clear that the senior managers found very green pastures in the public service. You know, obviously, these are guys who handle lots of money, big transactions, and but for me, the interesting thing is a trend like that indicates to me at least one deduction I can make is that these people at that level feel that they can get away with it. That's why their numbers are increasing. It's just one of those things that you would. Now, question would be, what is the PSC going to be doing to indicate to these people that you can't get away with it and sort of start changing the trend downwards? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. With Honorable Mutombela and others that have asked, can we then get clarity on what constitutes financial misconduct? You speak of a discussion document that you have released. All I can find is the PowerPoint presentation of February 2013 where this was discussed. And there you just refer to the PFMA. And if I read the PFMA correctly, you know, even paying an account late, and if the accounting officer did not take the necessary steps, would constitute financial misconduct. Now, can you just confirm then today what is deemed to be, can I call it like this then, discipline-worthy actions of financial misconduct? Because it does seem to me as if the definition may perhaps be so wide that nobody dares to implement this, because the person next door might say, but, you know, there are many other cases of financial misconduct in terms of your definition where people are not charged and where people are walking around. The other problem is, and if you could just give me some guidance on that as well, it seems to me as if the buck stops with the accounting officer in a public entity. Who charges the finance, the accounting officer, who is quite probably the most senior person in that organization? Whose responsibility is it then to ensure that that a disciplinary hearing is set up and that you know, the necessary steps are taken? And perhaps you can even tell me in how many cases since the PFMA came into play, were there disciplinary actions taken against accounting officers? Because it just seems to me, and we're seeing it here as well, that the people lower down the ladder find that, you know, it's quite easy to charge them, but we all know that the fish rots from its head, and my question is, do we have the necessary structures in place to ensure that those at the head also feel the pinch of disciplinary hearings, etc.? If you would first just therefore inform me what do you perceive as financial misconduct that is worthy of pursuit, and then following on that, my other questions. Thank you.
Thanks. My interest is in the sanctions imposed in disciplinary cases being at the discretion of the chairperson of those disciplinary hearings. And what I wanted to ask is really a repetition of my earlier question when I said that when Mr. Ntembu addressed this committee last year, I think it was, he indicated that this draft PSC amendment bill could possibly give thought to issuing directives relating to disciplinary procedures. So could this shortfall be addressed through the draft legislation, quite simply, is my question.
Okay, maybe we should take the similar approach, but respond to questions that you feel confident that you'll be able to respond to. If there are issues where you feel not confident to be reporting, because we don't want you to just respond for the sake of responding. We want real answers. We want you to be honest and tell us facts and the truth. Yeah. So if you are confident, respond where you feel confident. But can you respond to what Honorable Kado has raised? He's saying, he's repeating his question. Yeah? He's saying it for the second time. I think there's a need for you, for the Commission, to please respond to that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Before you come in, let me give Honorable Mend.
Just for what there is a slide where you are mentioning the Department of Agriculture, Human Settlement, yeah, this one, 18. Can we please be provided with more information detailing all this expenditure and this financial misconduct, and where did it happen, so that Chairperson, we can be able to call this particular department and find out exactly you have discovered that you have this financial misconduct, was Luna done, what did you do, who was fired, was the money recovered?
another issue. You spoke about the round table discussion and that there was actually no common agreement as to what is the real definition of financial misconduct. Maybe you can also provide us with the discussions, and let's also satisfy ourselves as to what were the discussions about and what were the conclusions. Because you're just mentioning it in passing, we did not go into detail as to what is it that was agreed on. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, just to indicate that it's still an ongoing discussion as well. Yes. There's no finalization yet. But just to mention
can I interrupt you? Because you're saying it is still ongoing. Legally, what does that mean? By the time when you come to a conclusion, or you're coming to that?
Yes.
Oh, okay, sure.
So, because it has been raised, actually. So, there is a standing definition of what causes financial misconduct, and which is what we reported on slide number 5. Just to be clear, and that stands, and that's what we're checking financial misconduct for. And then departments are raising issues that, for example, with respect to abuse of state vehicle, they don't see that thing as financial misconduct. But in terms of the framework, it is financial misconduct. And those are the cases that they are not reporting them on. And then, so that those are the issues. So it says the accounting officer commits an act of financial misconduct if that accounting officer willfully or negligently fails to comply with the requirements of Section 38, 39, 40, 41, and 42 of the PFMA. Amongst those sections, it's about allowing unauthorized expenditure or wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure, or allowing expenditure to happen which is not authorized by Parliament, amongst those cases. So this will stand, and any other official is covered in Section 44. Now, if the accounting officer is the one who willfully or negligently commits an act of financial misconduct, it is the executive authority, the minister or the MEC, who must set up charges against that accounting office. That is rarely done, if I can indicate. And sorry for my showing sadness or whatever, but these issues are sad, make no mistake. These issues are sad because at that level, that's where a lot of money disappears. I can just mention, just in the past 2 or 3 weeks, in Gauteng, for example, one of the accounting officers, the head of Department of Finance, was dismissed after a disciplinary process. He was suspended last year, the process went on, and then he was dismissed, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. So it's one of those rare cases where you see an accounting officer charged and found guilty. Of course, the case might still go ahead with appeals and even stuff like that. So that is something that we need to follow.
Asim Kaushal as well, the DG has been fired or suspended?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Those are the things that we need to talk about.
So there is something starting to happen in the 20 years. In the 20 years. Yeah, I'm happy, but that's where portfolio committees, even in all sectors, should help in checking some of these issues. If it's in the Department of Arts and Culture, the Department, the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture should get all these cases of financial misconduct, and then where are they in the department, and they ask questions about that one, whether people have been charged or not. So I think this relationship between us and portfolio committees will go a long way in ensuring that cases are followed up. By the way, this report on finalized cases of financial misconduct. We have been doing an overview on an annual basis, and we came with those reports in the in Parliament. So all those what do you call this PowerPoint presentation? It's a summary of the reports that we have tabled in Parliament. And then in those reports, for example, just to indicate, of the 2012-2013 financial year, it indicates the types of cases of financial misconduct reported by national and provincial departments, and even those that are still to be finalized. So the cases will include corruption, theft, gross negligence, misappropriation and abuse of funds, financial mismanagement. So that will be a number of cases that we report on. And you can see when it comes to corruption, it's small number of cases, maybe because we have not, departments have not gone deeper into investigating the details of those cases. So everything is covered. And with respect to provinces, also we indicate in all provinces the amount of money involved in finalized cases of financial misconduct, the amount recovered, no loss to state, and amount still to be recovered. So we go into those details. And when we go into different provinces again, we even unpack this, for example, Eastern Cape, into each department within Eastern Cape.
Sorry, Chairperson, while the commission is there, can you just, because I'm sorry, I came late, it's not your fault. They have it in 5 million from Western Cape.
Of the Western Cape, I think it's this year, it's 11-12.
2012-2013. Okay. Western Cape for 2012-2013.
Thank you.
in particular in the 11-12 financial year and 12-13 financial year. What this indicates, it indicates that subs have mechanisms in place to detect, to capture the cases of financial misconduct. And they've investigated these cases. So it's doing its work, because as you can see, it was 134 and then it went down to 72. So that means there is effectiveness in the department to deal with those cases.
Doesn't it refer to underreporting?
Well, there may be. There may be underreporting. But if 134 were reported in the previous financial year, it may also indicate that the mechanisms are more effective. But of course, like you said, a thief is a thief. Always find a way of getting away to take the money if it's not, if he or she is not checked. And analysis of the 4,831 cases. We can do that. We don't have the figures here. So we can make analysis of those. What are those cases? And then the amount of money involved. It's one of those cases that we'll report on next week, just to make sure. I think a number of these issues will have to give more information and statistics, which cases, and then we will present in the following week. With respect to legislation, I think it goes to the issues that we've just discussed earlier, on the issues of the mandate, and then what is it that we can do, what powers do we have, and then why do we need to amend our legislation to have either more powers or even reduce certain powers. So, nothing to reduce. But coming to the issues of legislation, we can suggest at the end of the day it's still Parliament that must change the law on what needs to be done. So we will put those ones as the chair, the deputy chair indicated there. The department which receives these cases, let me not say this, the unit which receives these cases from departments and verifies and analyzes is our integrity and anti-corruption forum. Branch, yes. It's the branch on integrity and anti-corruption. Sometimes they do visit departments to verify the information, to check whether the information is correct or not. And then even commissioners sometimes go to those different departments to verify the information. But that's IAC which deals with that. Yeah, I think if maybe other commissioners want to add, but most of the issues I think are those that we can give more information, statistics in writing.
Sure. Commissioner? Okay. Commissioner Cesar.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want thank you very much. Chair, I just wanted to add on the issue of the disciplinary code in the public service. It is regulated by DPSA, and those rules, they get discussed at the bargaining council where there are unions, and they issue resolutions out of those discussions. It's not a matter that is like the grievance procedure, which is actually crafted by the Public Service Commission.
It's a policy issue that is dealt with by the policy department, and in this case, DPSA. On the issue of the BEPSAL and the blacklisting of people who leave the service because of misconduct, I think the issue of BEPSAL may be something that needs to be addressed at a later stage, because the codes that are used to blacklist on BEPSAL are not really specifying that if it's a termination of service, it's an abscondment or dismissal because of financial misconduct. It just says this person has been dismissed in the public service, but it doesn't say for what. That is why departments are able to apply with the Treasury to lift the blacklisting code from BEPSAL, because the BEPSAL doesn't actually specify why was this person fired. Maybe this person was just absconded, but maybe something maybe that needs to be addressed in detail so that the system can actually say exactly why this person left the service. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Now it reminds me, after we have reported, the issue of overlapping. Because if you go to the public protector also, you said you also, in terms of your unit, goes and verify the information, whether it's the right information and all that, and also you do make recommendations. Having raised the issue of the capacity earlier on, how do you then, in relation to what you are reporting on now, avoid or minimize the duplication of the roles and responsibilities there? Thank you.
Yeah. With respect to the public service, we are the first constitutional organization that should deal with those issues around the public service. Even though the mandate of the public public protector says that the public protector can investigate any conduct in the state, but we investigate conduct with respect to the public service. So we are specialists when it comes to that. So we have an MOU which we want to strengthen to make sure that certain cases will be referred to the public protector and others will be referred to us. When is an executive authority that has to be investigated? That's not where we come in as a public service commission. That's where the public protector comes in. So we usually take those cases to the public protector. But when it's about the administration, the departments, both at national and provincial, we investigate those cases. So I think we work collaboratively with the public protector, though the relationship still needs to be strengthened so that we don't waste resources finding we are investigating the cases and public protector investigating the same cases, because people generally do forum shopping. They come to us when they realize the case is not being dealt with speedily, they go to the public protector, and if there is no communication, we may find ourselves investigating the same case. I think that's how we solve this problem of wasting of resources in terms of investigations.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think, Honourable Chair, for me, one of the things that I would certainly want us to take from the session is the biggest criticism that the portfolio committee is giving us today, but also at the same time providing an opportunity for us to overcome that, is the issue of listening to us, but at the same time saying to us, where you need our support, come with clear recommendations. And I think for me, it's very important that as the commission we take that up, so that we take back the questions and we do come with clear-cut proposals because we understand where our powers would stop, so to speak. And I was very encouraged when the chairperson said, bring it on, when we were speaking about certain regulatory changes or legislative things that we may want to propose for change, so that we are able to better monitor and evaluate. And I think for me, that is the challenge to the Commission, how we package the things that we bring to the committee for your support and for you to take it forward. For me, that was very important.
Thank you very much. Are there more issues, Dr. Tambe?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to suggest two things. The SAPS has appeared to be having good practices in terms of investigations. So I would like the PSC to look into the matter and find a way of lending expertise to the department, maybe to perform in the same, or just to up their bar in terms of the investigations. Chairperson, I also like to see a situation where a little detail is given about the situation in provinces. That we have, maybe we focus on a particular province to say what kind of cases are there. What is the situation generally in a particular province? So that will also help us to monitor sort of the performance of the PSC itself. And it will also be appreciated if at some stage the portfolio committee is part of the PSC, just to see it in action, so that we gain an insight into the exercises and the practices that ensue in the execution of their mandate. Thank you, Chair.
All right. We're waiting for written responses. The latest next Tuesday before end of business. On behalf of the portfolio, we still regard you as strategic partners. And we thank you very much for always availing yourself to come and present before the committee. We are also pleased about the fact that your morale is not low, because low morale could then cause low libido and the collapse of public service. And that you're also not depressed. Okay.